and I promise we won't be long tonight. I just wanted to share a little bit about the theme that we have for our VBS, because it's always good to have a theme for VBS for kids and to look at it and say, you know what, there's a whole lot that I can learn from this theme. And even in prepping this and in having preparation for the messages coming up in the summer, it's been a challenge to me. It's been a blessing to me, and I hope it's the same for you. I would encourage you, as Pastor Timmel was mentioning about VBS, I would encourage you to get out your phones or your paper calendars or whatever you use or the thing on the fridge and mark down those dates in June. That's the 22nd through the 26th of June, because that is super important to be able to be together serving God together and then serving one another as well. It's a wonderful opportunity that we have as a church family to come together and to see God work in some amazing ways. And it's an awesome opportunity when we can be used by God together as a church to kind of reach out into the community and into these kids' lives. And yes, it's a long week, but it's such a rewarding week. And so, again, those dates are June 22nd to the 26th. And so if you need a little reminder, if you need something to make sure that you're putting it on your calendar now, that would be a wonderful thing to be able to have as many workers and helpers as possible, because we need all the help we can get. Really, we do. And we are so excited for what God's going to do. Okay, so we're in Hebrews chapter 12, and obviously, if we just look back, and we will in just a second, if we just look back to Hebrews chapter 11, that's the famous Hall of Faith, so to speak. It's a bunch of it's like you're walking through a museum and you're looking at all these pictures of people who have amazing, incredible stories of faith. And we don't obviously have time to go into even any of them tonight, because there's so many rich, rich truths about God's faithfulness and God's goodness in each one of those stories. And there's some people that you're like, why in the world is that person mentioned in the Hall of Faith? But God uses people to demonstrate his power and his amazing grace in their lives. And it's a blessing to us, because we can see that, guess what, God can use me, a broken, normal person, just like he can use so-and-so in the Bible, who is obviously flawed, and their flaws are written out for all of us to see, but God still used them. And it's amazing to be able to see that. And so today we're looking in Hebrews chapter 12, but verses 1 and 2 are almost a continuation of chapter 11. And so when we get to here, it starts with wherefore, which we could also say therefore. And obviously, if you've gone to the Bible college, they always tell you, if you see a therefore in Scripture, you got to look back to see what the therefore is there for. Okay, so we're going to look back to see what the therefore is there for in just a second. But let's read in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, and see what the writer is telling us here. He says this: wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Let's go ahead and pray really quick. Father, I know there's so many important and exciting truths in this passage of Scripture, and I pray that you would use me, that you would be able to communicate your word clearly, and that people would be able to take something away that could be meaningful for them this evening. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so the writer here is, now, I need to say this actually, first of all. I was thinking about this while I was prepping, and I've been in Colossians for so long. If I accidentally say Paul as the writer of Hebrews, I'm not making a statement that I think that Paul legitimately is. It's just an error, because I've been talking about Colossians so much. So I'm just going to try to say the writer of Hebrews and not make any theological discussions here start up. But what the writer in this passage is trying to tell us is that you can successfully run the Christian race. You can not only just run the Christian race, you can successfully run the Christian race with God's strength. And that is such a blessing for us to be able to take away from tonight. That you can successfully run the Christian race. You can live the Christian life in a successful way with the strength that God gives us. So the question is obviously how. How do we run the Christian race in a successful way, in a way that we can be honoring and glorifying God as we run? Well, let's go ahead and find out. We're going to just look at three quick things here. First of all, before we even run the race, we've got to prepare for the race. We've got to prepare for the race. And that's what he talks about here in verse 1. He says in verse 1 here, "Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with a great cloud of witnesses." So what is he talking about here? Well, I believe he's saying here, first of all, that we need to, before we run our race, we've got to trust God's faithfulness. We've got to trust God's faithfulness. Now, in the time that the writer is talking about here, the foot races were no small feat. They were no small thing in those times. There were literal stadiums that were built just for foot races. And so the kind of racing that he's talking about here, you could have stadiums that would fill up with about 40,000 to 45,000 people. And even you would have the Circus Maximus that could fit in Rome, you could fit about 150,000. So depending on what you're doing, you had dedicated racing, foot racing spaces that were 40 to 45,000. You had places that you could do foot racing that are 150,000. And so when he's talking about a great cloud of witnesses here, basically imagine that you are here standing on the bottom of this stadium, and you are about to run this race, and you're looking out on this huge crowd that is watching you, that is waiting expectantly. And you feel those, if any of you have ever played sports before, you feel those, maybe those pre-race jitters, because you're excited. You have the excitement of being about to partake in this athletic competition, and you know that there's people watching, and you know that you have this anticipation that you want to perform well. And this is the, can I use the word feeling, that he's trying to get us to have as we read this passage. So think about this. You're encompassed with this great cloud of witnesses before we run this race, and they're cheering us on. Now, this great cloud of witnesses, we see, as we go back to chapter 11, that this is who he's talking about. These heroes, so to speak, of the faith are what makes up this great cloud of witnesses, this essentially grandstand of people, this huge crowd that is watching us as we're about to partake in this race. And they're watching us. Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 11, and let's just look at verses 39 and 40. Because these people did not just believe God. They actually, they had faith when they didn't have a physical proof. So it wasn't just this ethereal, I believe God. It was a very concrete, I have faith that God is going to do something that has not happened yet. And these were large things. If you go back and read chapter 11, these are important, life-changing experiences that they are completely relying in faith on who God is and what God has said. And so in verse 39 of chapter 11, he kind of sums things up here. He says, "And these, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect." And so this is what he's saying. All these people in Hebrews chapter 11, these heroes of the faith, demonstrated faith in God's faithfulness, even though they didn't understand or experience God's full plan. And these people are those who are in the stands. So it's essentially these people who are watching us who have run this race. They have completed their course, and they have done all that they've needed to do to get their prize, and now they're watching, and they're cheering us on, and they're supporting. And so now we are here running this race, as it were, at the bottom of this stadium on the racetrack, and they are the ones who are cheering us on and supporting us. And so that's good. That's wonderful. But it's not just that they're supporting us and they're cheering for us. They are a testament to us of God's great faithfulness. They are a testament to us that God was the one who helped me, who enabled me to complete my race. God is the only reason I'm sitting in these grandstands watching. God is the only reason I completed the race. God's faithfulness is what sustained me through this race. And so therefore, God's faithfulness for us is what can sustain us through our race. And friends, the reason that this is so important, and the reason that the writer starts with this, is because so many Christians, before they even start their race, they're already thinking like they've lost their race. So many Christians do not prepare for their race to win. They almost prepare for their race to lose. Well, I can't do this. There's so much more to go. There's so much of the race still to run. I can't run this race. Look at the difficulties that so-and-so has, and look at the trials that so-and-so is going through right now. I can never go through those trials. I don't think I have what it takes. Listen, that's not the point. The point is not about our ability or the amount of strength that we have. The point is about the ability that God has to sustain us. And that's the whole point that the writer is talking about here. That, listen, these people in the grandstands that are watching us are a testament that it wasn't about them. It wasn't about their strength. It wasn't about their ability. I mean, go and read that list. That list of people is not a heroes of the faith type list. Now, there's a couple people in there who you would say 100% those people are amazing. But even they had flaws and faults. Every single person was sustained 100% by the grace of God. And they were sustained by the power and the strength of God. And so that means that as we look around and we see them, so to speak, in the pages of Scripture, as we see their testimony of trusting God's faithfulness, we can say, you know what? I can trust God's faithfulness too. I can trust God's faithfulness to run this race. So we've got to, before we even start this race, we've got to trust God's faithfulness. But then look at that, the next part of verse 1. So he says, wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Now, at this point, he's talked about the grandstand, and he's setting the stage, and so we kind of feel what's going on. And so at this point, you expect him to say, seeing we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let's run the race. But that's not what he says. He says there's something else that needs to happen. So not only do we need to lay aside, make sure that we're trusting in God's faithfulness, but we also need to lay aside hindrances. We've got to lay aside hindrances if we're going to run the race. Now, during the Olympic competitions in the summer, you'll see runners who will be warming up on the track, and they'll have their warm-up suit on, their track suit or whatever that you would call it, and they'll have their headphones on or whatever. They're doing their stretches. They're getting loose. They're making sure that they're staying ready for the race. But one thing I guarantee you that you will not see in an Olympic competition is when they are called to be ready to get on the starting blocks, you will not see somebody go in their sweatsuit and in their warm-up gear over to the starting blocks and get in the box with their headphones on and say, all right, I'm ready to run my gold medal race in my sweatsuit. Right? Nobody would do that in my tracksuit. Why? Well, because they're trying to make sure that they shed all hindrances that would stop them from running the most successful race that they can, right? And that's obvious. We know this, right? And so those people, those Olympians who are the best at their field, so to speak, they run only in the gear that is necessary and helpful for them to win the race, right? So their goal is very clear. They say that they want to win this race. And so what are they going to do? They are going to remove everything that is not absolutely necessary that would add any sort of weight for them to be able to run that race. And so I'm afraid what happens in our spiritual lives is that we don't prepare for our spiritual race to the extent that it would take for us to be successful. Oh, sure, we prepare a little bit, right? We take off the things that maybe we think are too much, but we leave some things on. Because it's not bad, right? It's not sinful. But what are we missing? We're missing the point. We're missing the point of the race. The point of the race is to run a successful race, the most successful race that we possibly can. And so we are hampered by the things that we keep on because it's not bad. it's not bad if an Olympian runs in their long pants and a hoodie, but it's not helpful, right? It's not helpful at all. And so he actually gives us two different things that we need to lay aside, and it gives us a lot more specifics about what these things are in our spiritual life. So he says here in the verse, let us lay aside every weight. Weights. Okay, so the word here, weights, means it's got the idea of encumbrances or hindrances. And it's the idea of anything that can slow you down. Anything that can slow you down. It's not just sin. It can be, but it's not just sin. It's not just the things that you know are wrong. It's anything. Anything that has the potential to slow you down. Now, this was interesting. I actually started to kind of look into modern running shoes and what the weight would be for a modern running shoe. So most modern running shoes are about 8 to 10 ounces each, okay? So that doesn't sound like much, but sports researchers say that if you just add 3.5 ounces to each running shoe, the energy input increases by about 1%. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but think about this, okay? So, if you're running a marathon in those shoes that have increased in weight by 3.5 ounces, each shoe, okay, that tiny little weight difference is being lifted tens of thousands of times, because in a marathon you're going to take roughly 30 to 35,000 steps. And so when you're lifting that extra weight each time, you are effectively lifting thousands of pounds more than you would have been lifting if your shoes were the regular amount, 8 to 10 ounces. And so serious runners know this, so they make sure that they do the opposite. They have lighter shoes. They have lighter clothing. They are removing anything that is not necessary for the race, because 3 ounces doesn't feel heavy until you're lifting it 30,000 times, right? And that's the idea that our writer is presenting here for us, saying that these little things maybe don't seem like a big deal, but as we're running our Christian life, they make a difference. Right? 3.5 ounces don't sound like a lot, but when you're lifting it 30,000 times, it'll feel like a lot. And many times, we get stuck in our Christian lives thinking, what in the world is going on? Well, why am I not able to run in the way that I think I should, or think that the Lord wants me to? How can I not live this Christian life as successfully as I feel like I can or I should? And often it's because we're keeping little things around, maybe 3.5 ounces of things that we could shed, that we could remove to run a quicker race. So many Christians are running a difficult race because they're hampered by things that are unnecessary for the race. Friends, don't let things that are unnecessary weigh you down for your race. And so that's the first thing he says, weights. Lay aside the weights. Lay aside the weights. And then the second thing he says here, look at the verse again, let us lay aside every weight, and then he says, and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Now, this is obviously a little bit more obvious for us, right? He says, you gotta lay aside weights, and now you gotta lay aside sin. So weights, again, were anything that can slow you down. But the imagery that he's using here for sin is a little bit more nuanced. Okay, so the sin that doth so easily beset us, it gives us the idea of something being wound tightly around your legs and constricting your movement. So effectively, you can't move at all. That's what he's saying here. Okay, it's the idea of anything that can take you down. So weights are anything that can slow you down, and sin is anything that can take you down. And friends, sin can not only weigh us down, but it can stop our progress in the race altogether. And many people are wondering why they can't run a successful Christian race while they're trying to run effectively with their legs tied up, with their legs bound tightly, hampered by the sin that doth so easily beset us. And so if we're going to run successfully, we've got to lay aside those weights. We've got to lay aside the sin. Lay aside any hindrance that would encumber our process of running this Christian race. So we got to be serious about it. Okay, so if we're going to run successfully, we've got to prepare, first of all. But second of all, he said in the second half of verse number one, we've got to run the race. Okay, so we got to prepare, but now we've got to actually run the race. Now, let's look at that second half of verse 1. He says, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. He says, let us run. Okay, so if we're going to run the race, we've got to do three things while we're running the race. We've got to first run with passion. We've got to run with passion. Now, this is interesting that he uses this word run, okay? He doesn't say, let's walk the race, or let's slowly stroll. He says run, and this is intentional. This is important. One pastor writes this, many Christians could hardly be described as running. Some are merely jogging, walking slowly, or even sitting and lying down. And friends, many of us have heard this before, but the Christian life is not a sprint. But unfortunately, I feel like many Christians treat the Christian life like a sprint. And what I mean by saying that is that we run as hard as we can for a little bit of time. And then we stop. And we rest. And we feel, or we act at least, like everything's over. The race is done. Our time of exertion is done. But that's not what it is. The Christian race can be more compared to a marathon. It's a time where you have to give everything that you have over and over and over again, which is why I've never run a marathon. It's difficult. It's hard. It's not something that means that you're just going to be giving some effort and then you'll be able to relax just a little bit. It's a process. Some Christians treat the Christian life like a sprint. And they sprint for a while, and then they slow down, and they treat their life like the race is finished while they're here, while they're living. And can I say, if you're here sitting right now, you're not finished with the race. You're still in the race. So don't act like you're finished. Don't relax and think that you're done with your race. The race is still going on. So he says, we're going to run with passion. But then he says, let us run with patience. We got to run with patience, too. We got to run with patience. So some people start out running and they stop because they think they've finished. But other people, and maybe it's more common here tonight, other people just get tired, right? And the word patience here is a very specific word that's referring to endurance in the face of opposition. And the picture of running is beautifully illustrating this point here. So you have a runner who is maybe at the Olympic level, and you realize that that runner was once a beginner. And in order to get to that Olympic level, the runner had to push against the oppositions that they faced. The physical oppositions, the mental oppositions, every kind of opposition that you face as a runner, they had to push the boundaries over and over and over again. And if they did not push the boundaries, they would not be where they were on that Olympic track. And friends, it's the same with us. Many times we feel like we can be at a place spiritually, at a mature place spiritually, when we're not pushing our boundaries, when we're not pushing the boundaries spiritually, when we're not enduring opposition. And he says we've got to endure in the face of opposition. We're called to run the race with endurance, knowing that it will be difficult, expecting challenges to come up. But we're also realizing that we're not alone. We're not alone. Okay, so we've got to be able to run with passion, run with patience, and then the third thing, run with purpose. Look what he says here. Let us run with patience, and then he says, the race that is before us. Now, I love this because I just discovered this week, and it really made a difference in my heart. And so, the end of verse 1 is such an important principle about our race that I hadn't gotten before. Okay, so it seems a little bit strange when we say this phrase, the Christian race is not ours. But it's true. Your Christian race is not yours. And that's the principle that this verse lays out here. He says, run the race. And what does that second part say? That is set before us. This gives us a very clear purpose for our race. And it also beautifully illustrates the illustration of a runner very clearly fits right in here. Okay, so what does your runner do? Your runner goes to a stadium and gets onto the track and runs. Let me tell you what the runner does not do. The runner does not handpick a stadium and handpick a racetrack and then run. You are told what stadium you go to. You are told what race you go to. And you run. And friends, I think that so many of us spend time complaining about the conditions of the racetrack instead of running the race. We complain about the things that we can't control, that we weren't meant to control. Meanwhile, we're letting the thing that we should be doing, that we're commanded to do, fall by the wayside. Well, Lord, all these financial difficulties that you put in my way, we're supposed to run the race. But what about the relationship difficulties that I'm having? We're supposed to run the race. This is a race that God has set before us. You don't pick the racetrack or the stadium. You just get there and you run. And so sometimes we stress out over the things in our race that we don't have control over. And our purpose in running the race should be to run the race successfully, which basically means to run in a way that honors Jesus Christ. It's not to critique the racetrack that he's set up for us. Don't get sidetracked with letting things distract you from running. Don't let the conditions of your racetrack, what God has set before you, don't let that ruin what God is trying to do through your race. So he tells us that we've got to run with passion, and we've got to run with patience, and we've got to run with purpose. But then at the very end here, look at verse 2. He tells us that third of all, finally, we got to finish the race. Now, if you're anything like me, you look at these first two verses, or excuse me, the first verse, and you look at all the things that we're supposed to do, right? You got to trust God's faithfulness. You got to lay aside the weights and the sins, and you got to run with passion and patience and purpose, and you think, easier said than done, right? It's easy to say it. It's a lot harder to do it. And so, it's a very true statement. How can we possibly expect to run this kind of a race with this much success? Well, look at verse 2. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. First of all, we've got to look to Jesus. And there's our answer. We say, "What? How do I run my race successfully?" Look to Jesus. But I don't have the strength. Look to Jesus. I don't know how much longer I can keep going in this race that I have. Look to Jesus. You see what he's doing here? He's giving us a very simple answer about how do I run the race? And the answer is look to Jesus. Why? Well, he says because he's the author and he's the finisher of our faith. So yes, it's nice to have those people in the crowd to be able to spur us on and to be able to cheer for us and to be able to see their examples and for it to be an encouragement for us. But the reason that this looking to Jesus is so encouraging, the reason that it's so encouraging that he's the author and the finisher of our faith is because Jesus is saying here, you can trust me because I made the racetrack. You can trust me because I made your specific track. And you can trust me because I'm the one who's going to guide you through your racetrack. That's the whole point. He's saying he's the author. He's the one who created this life track that we're running on right now. And that means that we're not trailblazing here. He says he's the author and he's the finisher, which means that not only did he make the course, he ran the course. Not only is he the one who made the course and is directing us through the course, he's already completed the course. He's finished the course. And so we're following the one who has already completed the race. Wouldn't you trust somebody who has already finished the race? Who's already ran the course? So we've got to make sure that we are looking to Jesus. And then he tells us, second of all, we've got to follow Jesus' example. Okay, look to Jesus and then follow Jesus' example. Look what he says here in the end of verse 2. Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So the question is, how should we run our race? Well, we should run our race in the same way that Jesus ran his race. And two things stick out to me. First of all, Jesus' endurance. And it says here that he, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. And then says, despising the shame. And that phrase, despising the shame, that's got the idea of not allowing the suffering or shame of the cross to deter him from his ultimate goal. He did not allow the suffering and the shame and the sorrow to stop him from doing what he knew he had to do. And why? Why did he not let it deter him from his ultimate goal? Well, look at that first part. Who for the joy that was set before him? It's because of you and me. That's what his ultimate goal was. Who for the joy that was set before him did not let the shame and the agony and the physical and mental pain did not let that deter him from what was truly the most important. Did not let it deter him from the most from his ultimate goal, which was our salvation. And I wonder, friend, how easily you and I are deterred from our path on the race. How easily, what does it take for us to be steered off course? Because I think a lot of times we're deterred by things that are far smaller than physical or emotional pain many times. Are we determined to live a life that honors Christ no matter what? Because that's what Jesus demonstrated through his life. Okay, so Jesus ran his race with endurance, and then finally he ran his race to exaltation. Look at what he says at the end of the verse. And is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And what he's saying here is so neat, because he's saying the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross for you and for me is enough for you to run a successful race. It's enough. The sacrifice that Jesus made is everything you need to be able to run your race successfully. You don't need anything else, because you've already been given the greatest gift. And that's also a reward for reaching the finish line, right? Being in the presence of God himself. And that reward, as we reach the finish line, is far greater and far better than any earthly reward could ever be for winning any kind of competition. So, friend, as we close tonight, you can run a successful Christian race, but only by the power of Christ. You can't do it in your own strength, but you can run a successful Christian race by the power of Jesus Christ. So I hope that tonight you take a little test or quiz in your own mind. Do I have things that are weighing me down in my Christian life? Do I have things that are tying me up so I'm not able to run as effectively as I can? Or am I complaining about the conditions of my racetrack instead of running the race as Christ has told me? Let's go ahead and pray. Father, I thank you that you've orchestrated this Christian life, and we can run it knowing that you've already won the victory. Father, I pray that you would help each one of us to run our Christian race in light of that truth. Help us to run victoriously. Help us to run with purpose. Help us to run towards the goal, towards the finish line, because we know that your prize is so much better than any earthly prize that we could ever have. With your heads bowed and eyes closed, I would just ask you to do business with the Lord this evening as you see fit. Has the Lord brought something to mind? Has the Lord challenged you about a certain thing in your Christian race? So as the piano plays, you do business with the Lord as you see fit.